Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, cow-calf field specialist based out of Lemon. And joining me to host this episode is Sydney Borders. Sydney is a PhD student here at SDSU and was also a guest on Cattle HQ talking about the 2022 BQA audit. So I'm very thankful that she is joining me here today. I'm also excited to have Dr. Ty Lawrence from West Texas A&M talking about the issue of liver abscesses in the beef industry. So I just want to turn it over to Sydney because this is an area that she became very familiar with when she was doing the BQA audit. So, Sydney, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us today. I know that you and your team have done lots of extensive research on liver abscesses, and so we're super grateful to have you here. As Robin previously mentioned, and we've talked about in a previous episode with the 2022 National Beef Quality Audit, that audit found that liver abscesses are one of the leading causes for liver condemnation, and that accounts for approximately 20% in both the fed steer and heifer side, as well as the market cow and bull. So it's become an issue that's become a hot topic in the U.S. beef industry. And Dr. Lawrence, we were wondering if you would just be able to start off by talking about, you know, what exactly is a liver abscess and what are the causes behind that?
Sure. So a liver abscess is it's a pocket, and some people would call it a pustule. The abscess itself is mostly white blood cells and byproducts of the immune reaction of the body trying to fight an infection in the liver. So let's back up and step into how that happened. The liver is a filter, and it's also a tremendous metabolic organ that is altering nutrients, generating nutrients, and creating a whole host of metabolic actions and reactions for the function of the living organism. As part of its function, the liver receives blood flow from the portal vein. Well, the portal vein drains almost the entire gastrointestinal tract of an animal. And so if items other than nutrients, and I'm going to refer to bacteria here, escape the gastrointestinal tract and enter the portal vein, they will be trapped, caught, filtered, and excluded in the liver. So when we have bacteria leaving the GI tract, they get filtered out in the liver, and some of these bacteria are very virulent, and they have the ability to fight the immune system and, in many cases, win. One of the primary bacteria that we are concerned about in that little give and take that I just mentioned is called Fusobacterium necrophorum. It has been shown time and again to be a dominant bacterium in liver abscesses. But I do want to also preface that it's not the sole bacterium. If you were to culture what is in a liver abscess, you would almost always call that a polymicrobial infection, in which there are many different family, different phyla, different genus, different species of bacteria. But most of the industry has focused on Fusobacterium necrophorum as the primary cause. And multiple experiments conducted primarily by Dr. T.G. Nagaraja at Kansas State have demonstrated that injecting Fusobacterium into the portal vein and or inoculating cattle with Fusobacterium can certainly cause liver abscesses. And so we know that is one of at least multiple mechanisms that's highly likely. Something that I'll go into a little history here. For most of cattle feeding and beef production history, we have all assumed that Fusobacterium escaped the GI tract in the rumen and or the four compartment stomach, primarily through the rumen. However, more recent evidence suggests that it might also be escaping through the small and/or large intestine, and then we may have many more options for the GI tract to leak, if you will, or allow bacteria to escape and then get to the liver, thus causing that infection. Now, once that bacteria gets to the liver, it is extremely virulent. And the important part here is that the Fusobacterium are able to overtake the innate immune system via the white blood cells. And that's why the liver abscess itself is largely a collection of inactivated white blood cells and other immune products. And so the body is fighting an active infection in its liver while it's also trying to metabolize nutrients. And so in cattle with severe liver abscesses, we typically see some level of muted growth in that they typically weigh less as carcasses and as live animals. They typically deposit less back fat, and they typically have smaller ribeyes than an animal with a healthy liver. So in really severe cases, we see that infection diminishes their productivity.
Right. And along with that, you know, the diminished productivity, live performance, as well as what you see on the carcass side of things, are there any other traits or ways to detect liver abscesses in live cattle? Or is it one of those things where you sell those cattle, they go to harvest, and you see that they didn't perform as well, or they have the liver abscess present at the time of evisceration?
So, Sydney, in gross visual observation, think livestock judging or live animal evaluation, there's absolutely no way to tell that an animal has a liver abscess. In fact, the animal itself probably doesn't know it has an abscess, because the liver doesn't have any pain receptors. So it's not a painful process for the animal to have an abscess. However, abscesses can sometimes be detected via ultrasound. In a feeder calf, an animal that's thinner in flesh and lighter in weight and literally would have a thinner body wall, an abscess can be detected. Some of my colleagues have done that in recent months and years. However, as the animal gets larger and larger and fatter, the abscesses become more difficult to detect with ultrasound. And in a finished animal, you can probably see about 40% of the liver via ultrasound technology. So it's possible to detect it with ultrasound. But there could be a decent rate of false negatives because of the 60% or so of the liver that cannot be seen with ultrasound technology. There's also been blood work examinations done. So you bleed an animal and then you evaluate multiple markers, and there's some plausibility that yes, you could detect it with blood work. One of the bigger questions, and or without a good answer, is if we detected it with ultrasound or if we detected it with blood work, what are you going to do? So an animal has one. If it's a minor abscess, we think they can probably heal and resolve in the course of maybe up to 6 weeks or less. However, if it's a major severe abscess, many of us are suspicious that may never resolve. So we don't really have a great answer as to what to do if we're able to detect these in the living animal.
So Dr. Lawrence, it's interesting that you said that research is showing into the small intestines, because I just recently, I was trying to learn more about liver abscesses for this podcast, to tell you the truth. And there was just a project I was reading that they were, you know, it was an older research project, but we're uncertain on the absorption rate past the stomach of the animal. So that's interesting that you mentioned that, because it was in my mind, to tell you the truth. So I appreciate that. So, but my question also for you then is, I know there's different levels of liver abscesses. There's a grading system, if you want to call it that. How long does it take for even the most minor liver abscesses to occur to those ones that, like you just mentioned, will never potentially be able to go away? Does that make sense, Dr. Lawrence?
Absolutely. So through collaborative research that I've been a part of, We know that an abscess can form in as little as 2 weeks. And or well, I say form and be detected in as little as 2 weeks. So, you know, in theory, there may be a few days less than that for it to actually form and be seen. But that's probably the known minimum. I could be, you know, there could be somebody out there that's illustrated a study that's 10 or 12 days, but within the course of a few days to weeks, they can be detected.
So what's causing these abscesses then? I mean, I obviously it's a metabolic, so there's things happening, but can you tell the audience what is causing these abscesses to occur?
So the abscess is the escaping of the bacteria out of the gastrointestinal tract and then entering the liver. The liver immune system recognizes that the bacteria are not self. They're not part of the innate body, and the liver wants to get rid of them. But the virulence of the bacteria, so let me back up a minute. The immune system sends white blood cells to phagocytize these bacteria, which basically means to eat them and trap them within the white blood cell. And then it would, in a normal immune system, that white blood cell would go on and be contained in lymph and lymph nodes. In the case of liver abscesses, the bacteria are have virulent mechanisms that are able to inactivate the white blood cells. And so then another one gets sent. And it gets inactivated, and another one, and hundreds of thousands and millions more until all of a sudden you have an area within the abs, within the liver that is no longer liver tissue. This area, and the area could be this could be as small as the head of a pin, almost microscopic. Or the area could be larger than a basketball. And everything in between exists in biology that is seen every day at a slaughterhouse. So the range of how much material has been accumulated in a liver varies widely. But for us to see baseball size, golf ball size abscesses would be very normal every day of the year. And you see some very fantastic examples. Where you kind of wonder at times how the animal was still living and metabolizing nutrients because it's fighting such a large infection.
Typically, these abscesses, a lot of times, when you read about them online in different magazines and stuff, they tend to be associated with cattle that are fed on a high concentrate diet. And so my question for you, Dr. Lawrence, is, is there a correlation between high concentrate diets and feedlot cattle versus, the rates that you're seeing in market cows and bulls? What could be potentially causing those because they're more on a roughage-based diet as compared to concentrate?
Absolutely. So, research that that our team published just a few years ago said that a cull range cow, so think yellow fat, orange fat range cow, exhibits a liver abscess at a rate of 16%, whereas a dairy cow fed a higher fed actually fed a diet and it being somewhat inclusive of concentrate had a liver abscess at the rate of 19%. Whereas a native steer or heifer is probably in the 20 to 26, 7% range from the same type of beef animal. So the difference is the diet. That's the big difference between fed steers and heifers and cull cows and bulls. But you got to wonder what's going on in the cull cow and bull. 16% of them have a liver abscess. So it's probably something other than diet that is a maybe. And in the case of the range cow and of the dairy cow, I'm going to opine with no evidence that it may be the consumption of rough forages. So if you have a cow that is eating, you know, very fibrous, stiff, rough forage, and you have an abrasion of the lips, cheeks, gum, esophagus, that abrasion could allow the bacteria out of the GI tract and into the portal vein. In a traditional yellow fat range cow, it's probably not an acidotic reaction that that cause the leakage of the gut? It might be stress, maybe weather stress, maybe reproductive stress, you know, environmental stress later that caused a perforation or leakage, if you will, of the intestines. But the rumen is not likely the cause in those, for sure in the range cow, and a lesser likely cause in the dairy cow.
So those animals that are out on those cows that are out on corn stalks, for instance, would that be a possible cause then if you're talking about a rough forage?
That could be a risk. Yes. So any forage that would potentially cause abrasions of the GI tract would allow for bacteria to escape the GI tract.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting comment, Dr. Lawrence. I never thought about it that way, and that it's more of an abrasion around the small or through the small intestine or intestinal tract. That's
Right.
very interesting,
so
and
it
I
could
think
it
an
could
important
start as early
contribution.
as the mouth, lips, cheeks, gums, you know, with eating a very abrasive roughage. And it doesn't, the animal might not have to bleed, but if you cause enough of an abrasion to see blood, then obviously bacteria can go the other way.
Right. So along with that point, and the fact that they're being seen, you know, across a variety of different types of cattle, previous research has indicated that cattle of different origins, different breeds that come from different feedlots typically could be more prone to getting liver abscesses compared to other breeds. And so I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on the differences that you've seen specifically of cattle of different origins and how you're seeing different rates from cattle that come from different places.
Yep. So of all cattle rearing opportunities, the greatest risk for liver abscesses are cattle reared in a dairy. So, you know, in dairy cattle, we remove the calf from its dam at day one, maybe hour one, maybe minute one, depending on the dairy. And then that calf is reared completely different than a traditional beef type range calf. And they're traditionally pulled off of milk as soon as possible and put onto a concentrate diet as soon as possible. And, you know, and then they're fed by a human, arguably for their entire life. And so more days on a concentrate ration is a much higher risk than less days on a concentrate ration. And so the feeding management system and the rumen health differences between the dairy reared calf and the ranch reared calf is fundamentally the reason that we see so many in the dairy reared system.
I'm
Go
sorry.
Ahead.
So we've been talking about, you know, how abscesses occur, why they occur, what it means, but what does it mean on a economic standpoint for the beef industry?
Great question. So if I were to pull up a USDA market news report and you look at value of products that would come from fabrication, so think ribeye roll, eye of round roast, shoulder clod, things like that, you would see a whole litany of products. One of the products that we remove from beef carcasses is outside skirt meat, which you and I, Sydney, know as diaphragm, and the consuming public knows as fajita meat. Well, in liver abscess cases, many, 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 many of those animals have the liver abscess adheres via fibrin connective tissue as part of the immune reaction to the diaphragm. Well, in those cases, the liver is removed and the diaphragm is removed from that animal. And that can cause the packer unintended consequences. So in the summertime, let's think May through about September, fajita meat or outside skirt meat sells second in price only to tenderloin. And so you might be paying $17 a pound for your wholesale tenderloin. You might be paying $15 a pound for your wholesale skirt meat. And so all of a sudden, every time you have a severe liver abscess, you just cut off your second most valuable product and you threw it into meat and bone meal. And so that's a financial loss immediately. Secondly to that is many packers have found themselves shorting orders. So you have an order, and you know every day we're going to kill 4 or 5 or 6,000 cattle at a given production facility. And so you pre-sell all of that meat. So if I'm slaughtering 5,000 cattle a day, well, I'm going to sell the outside skirt meat of those 5,000 cattle. Well, then I find myself, if I have a severe abscess day, only having 3,000 skirts to sell. Well, now I'm shorting orders for 2,000 people or 2,000 skirt meats. And so I've literally had conversations with beef processing plant managers who have told me on multiple occasions that's been a real issue in recent years because their liver abscess rates are so high, they're shorting orders for products they intended to have but didn't because of abscesses. Likewise, if the abscess ruptures and the pustule is onto the carcass, now, according to USDA regulations, that must be cut off. So you can't wash it off. And so we're now cutting maybe the inside of the cavity off. Maybe we're cutting the brisket off. Maybe we're cutting the shanks off. Maybe we're cutting the flank off. And in many, many cases, the carcass will weigh tens to hundreds of pounds less because of the ruptured abscess. And so, depending on the sales mechanism, that could either be the producer's burden, economic burden, or it could be the processor's economic burden, depending on who owned the animal at the time it went across the hot scale.
So, along with the economic burden of trim out value, you've previously mentioned that there's also some performance differences in cattle with those major liver abscesses. And so, does that become a factor into the economic implications of this problem as well?
It does. It does. And there's a litany of data that illustrates animals with severe liver abscesses. So anything we call the A plus score or worse, they're growing at a muted level compared to minor abscesses, which are growing slightly slower and slightly less efficiently than animals with none. And so the more severe it is, the lesser live weight an animal will be, the lesser carcass weight, the lesser back fat thickness, the lesser ribeye. So you're literally selling a smaller, lighter weight, leaner animal, and that grew slower. What we don't have great data for is feed efficiency, feed to gain on those type of animals, just because of the difficulty in acquiring those information.
Right. And so moving forward with this, obviously, it's an issue that has huge implications for both the feeder as well as the packer. But moving forward with this issue, where do you see our industry going as far as trying to control these instances of liver abscesses and how to mitigate these problems?
That's a big unknown. So I'll tell you where we are today. We're in a place where the vast majority, and I'm going to guess approximately 90% or more of the industry would utilize the antimicrobial Tylosin phosphate. It's marketed and sold by two different companies, but it is an antibiotic put into the feed to reduce the prevalence and severity of liver abscesses in Finnish cattle. There have been multiple attempts to produce a vaccine, either a toxoid, Bactrin toxoid, or a Bactrin itself, to vaccinate against the liver abscess. And even though some of those small trials looked promising, at commercial field scale level, they just absolutely don't work at all. And they don't really provide any meaningful benefit. So the current option is really an antimicrobial. And Tylosin phosphate would be the dominant option to do that. For cattle that are fed in Canada, you might see some chlorotetracycline used for the same manner, but typically isn't used in the United States for that purpose. So we have an antimicrobial option that works and it reduces liver abscesses, and that's well documented and well repeatable. We've tried vaccines and they've not worked well thus far. I suspect people will continue to attempt vaccines, and I hope they do. Maybe we can find one that is meaningful and applicable and repeatable, not just in the small trial, but in the large field applications. And right now, that's kind of the crux of technology. Some people have tried to mitigate liver abscesses by tweaking forage and concentrate ratios, and a little bit. Some people have tried it with timing. So I'm going to say that a lot of this has to do with nutritional gut health and gut health management. And appropriate gut health management looks a whole lot different at the gut table during harvest than lack of gut health management when an animal gets to the gut table. And I can usually tell the difference pretty quickly, pen by pen, feed yard by feed yard, on how those cattle have been managed.
Oh, I just have one last question, at least for me, Sydney, and that is, as you're talking about antimicrobial use to help mitigate these abscesses, but we know that regulations are becoming stricter and stricter with the use of antimicrobials. Well, I think will change, as you said. People are looking more at, the nutrition side of things and timing and the ratio between forages and concentrates. Do you see that in research becoming more dominant or predominant or more prevalent, looking at things like that versus antimicrobial use?
So it depends on who you are. There are multiple groups in the industry that are working on both of those outcomes. I know and work with groups that are working to develop new antimicrobials to mitigate liver abscesses. I know and work with groups who are trying to mitigate abscesses nutritionally. Those people might not agree with each other, but I'm fortunate to get to work with all of them. I can tell you, if we were to do nothing nutritionally and stop using the one antibiotic that is widely used today on a pen basis, you'd probably see abscesses bump between 10 and 50% overnight. And it depends on the diet and the management that you have today versus, if you change nothing and you just took that one item out of your diet, it will get worse instantly. How much worse it gets depends on how you're doing right now.
I appreciate that comment, Dr. Lawrence. It's about time to wrap up this podcast. So, Sydney, do you have any additional questions, comments, thoughts?
No, I don't. I know I've certainly learned a lot. So, thank you so much, Dr. Lawrence, for being a part of this.
Well, thank you to both Sydney and Dr. Lawrence for joining me on this episode. This has been Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until the next episode, remember the cheapest way to improve your looks is to wear a smile.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.